Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, Joyce. Thank you for your leadership, your dedication during the trying times of your two-year tenure. My gosh, you were lead during COVID. So for that, we're grateful, very grateful. Thanks to Paul Pfeiffer and the staff of the OJC, not only for this conference, but for what they do day to day and their job to serve your needs through this organization. And I think they do a great job. Good morning, members of the judiciary, and good morning to the justices who are with us today. They are seated in the back row. I will start with Justice Fisher, who is here, Justice Stewart, who is here, and Justice Donnelly, who is here. Obviously, it's campaign season, or we'd have more attendees. Welcome to Chief Justice Nathan Heck of the Supreme Court of Ohio and Chief Justice Anna Blackburn Rigsby of the District of Columbia Court of Appeals and Judge Robert E. Bacharach of the 10th District United States Court of Appeals. Your participation in this conference broadens our perspective and exemplifies the collaboration that is required to make the judiciary stronger. Thank you for being here. To the hundreds of judges who have assembled from across the state, I am honored to be here with you in my final State of the Judiciary. We've come a long way together. In 2011, I stepped up to fill the big shoes left by Chief Justice Tom Moyer. When I did that, I promised you that we would work together, that we would be strong, even in the face of uncertainty and challenges. We just didn't know the challenges that we were going to face. If I remember correctly, we were working our way out of the recession that followed the 2008 mortgage lending crisis. It was one of the worst economic times in history. Reduced tax revenue and funding cuts came as the demand as services increased. State and county budgets were squeezed for funds and the financial pain was felt by the courts. Judges hadn't had a raise in years. Yet I promised you that we would face the challenges and, quote, seize the opportunity as the vehicle for positive change to build a better judiciary. I think that's taken from my remarks from my first address. That is what I wanted from my time in leadership to this organization, continuous improvement. Now, I want to look back a bit, reflect on where we are, and talk about the opportunities that lie ahead. Together, over the last 12 years, we have seized and created opportunities. There has been positive change. First, I have learned from smart people. I have accomplished nothing by myself. If it weren't for the Supreme Court's competent, hardworking, brilliant staff, none of what we have achieved would have been possible. I will miss working with the men and women of the Supreme Court. I will miss working with the men and women of the Supreme Court and those of the judiciary of Ohio. One of the smartest things I did was continue convening task force when there were big problems to tackle. And I learned that from Chief Justice Moyer. During my tenure, I have convened 24 task forces and commissions and received their reports and their recommendations. The efforts have involved many, many members of the judiciary, the bar, court staff, the legislature, the executive branch, and the public. Far too many people to name here, but they have my gratitude for the good work that they have done. And I have shown my appreciation by working tirelessly to follow through on what they have recommended. A task force is a phenomenal tool to solve problems. It brings everybody to the table. Often it is comprised of people who would not normally sit at the same table with one another. They look at the issues, the data, best practices, and they hear from experts to innovate possible solutions. And they make recommendations. If they recommend changes in the law, it's up to the legislature to move those recommendations forward. If they recommend changes in rules, we can work to implement those rules to the rules of superintendents and the rules for the practice and procedure at the court. At the end of the day, maybe everyone doesn't agree with everything in the final reports, and that's okay, because they have had their say and they know that they were heard. We have input from a variety of perspectives, and I believe in the work of compromise. There don't always have to be losers in order to have winners. Sometimes the final result is a great outcome because even though everyone doesn't get everything, nobody got nothing. Compromise, it is a component of fairness and the fair administration of justice. Nothing has advanced the administration of justice as much as the changes we have been able to make as a result of technology. It is ironic that the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to age out of the job has ushered in the greatest modernization in the history of Ohio courts. Getting back to technology, I am proud of what we have accomplished because technology allows access to our courts 24/7. It reduces cost for litigants. It enables attorneys to provide better service to clients. It reduces failure to appear rates. It makes it possible for judges to better manage their dockets and to speed towards justice. And it has saved taxpayers exponentially. Technology has been a bright spot in the lessons that we learned from the pandemic. The pandemic just took us from being technology-driven to technology-dependent. But my commitment to technology, and yours, didn't start with the pandemic. Nearly a decade ago, the Supreme Court went to e-filing. E-filing increases access to courts, it reduces costs for litigants and taxpayers, and it makes the work of the clerks and the court administrators easier. Many of them are already stretched so thin. And I know local courts don't always have the money to make the initial investment in technology. That's why, in 2015, I took money from the Supreme Court's budget to give to the lower courts around Ohio through a program that we started, and it was called Technology Grants. Each year, it was as many millions of dollars that I could divert. At the start of the pandemic and throughout, we saw the need to give you even more. There were urgent needs to keep your courts moving, and you needed technology in order to do that. This year, we were able to fund 48 court projects for a total of $3.1 million. And over the life of the program, the court has invested more than $38 million in your courts. The largest of those grants this year went to Muskegon, Tuscarawas, Richland, and Erie counties. As an example, Erie County will replace its 30-year-old system with a modern electronic system for access to the docket, filing, paying fees, and more. And the common pleas, the domestic relations, and the probate courts will be integrated into one system for the first time. When the new system is completed, the public attorneys and staff will have remote access 24/7. When it's completed in 2023, this big project will improve efficiency and save litigants time and money. It is a huge win. I'm happy the Supreme Court can make it possible with the initial outlay of money. We have also completed the investment of more than $4 million in case management technology so that all appellate courts can have electronic filing and electronic document management capability. The Supreme Court is committing $500,000 a year to maintain and upgrade that system. Text reminders for technology is an important trend, primarily used to remind someone of a hearing. I probably don't have to tell you that a lot of people that are involved in the court system don't necessarily manage their schedules very well. And so they don't show up for their appearances or conferences or hearings or even trials. In many types of cases, from traffics to felony matters and everything in between, there is a high failure to appear rate. One solution is text reminders to the individual. It's really a pretty simple application that mimics the notifications that we all receive from other businesses that have used them for years. Your dentist, your doctor's office, school events, and most importantly, your salon. In Ohio, courts are using texting technology. 8 courts got tech grants this year to pilot technology and collect data so that we'll have statistics to assist us with best practices around using this technology. There are various studies across the country which show very promising results. New York City criminal courts found that receiving any pre-court message reduces failure to appear for their court dates. The most effective messages were combination messages, texts that include both a reminder to plan how they're going to get to court and the consequences of failing to appear, in addition to, of course, reminding them of the date. Monitoring our own pilot programs and other court results is very instructive, not just about the use of messages, but what the message should say, how frequently they should be sent, the what time of day, and more. What we are learning overall is that reaching people through their personal technology, their cell phone, leads to timely compliance. Now, nobody knew in 2015 that there would be a global pandemic, but because of the early vision and commitment by so many of you, Ohio was technologically better prepared than many states. Last year, we talked about the work of the 25-member iCourt Task Force. It gathered information on how courts innovated during COVID, what practices worked, what technologies were best, and what changes were made that improved things for the better. It's a 600-page report. I think you recall me telling you that. I said we were not going to deliver it, but you can download it or simply read it on our website. Judge Rocky Koss of Highland County was the right leader to chair that task force. You will all benefit from his leadership on this for years to come. Justice Pat DeWine was the ex officio member on the task force and the Supreme Court staff attorney who did probably more work than anybody connected with the project is Kiana Pearson, who continues to work to implement the recommendations. The iCourt Task Force, which was formed during the pandemic, continues to provide advantages for your local courts. The first rule changes based on iCourt recommendations went into effect July 1st. Next week, a 45-day public comment period will open on the next round of rule changes, which include requiring criminal and juvenile courts to provide an e-filing option. This mirrors the requirement for civil cases. I encourage you to go to our website, review the proposals, and make comments if you have any. The rules package also includes some non-technology components. It is a robust package, so please take a look. Let us know what you think. I would like to thank Robert Stewart and the IT team at the Ohio Supreme Court for leading collaboration among courts. The IT Court Leaders Forum conducts an annual survey of all the courts in Ohio about their technology. So we are keeping tabs on what you have, what your capacity is, and how we can help. And they have an online working group to share information. With 385 courts in the state, 10 to 20% of them are changing core applications each year, upgrading, replacing, and so on. But for each of them, it may be the first time in maybe 20 years to do a project of that magnitude. Through the forum, the administrator can see what systems other courts use, learn the pros and cons of the experience. As one court administrator said, quote, it saves time and money, but mainly it provides the confidence that I was not alone. Those types of comments make me extremely happy. And I love it when judges and your court administrators recognize what a fabulous group of men and women work at the court, always ready to listen and help. And we want to continue to serve you better. I have heard you loud and clear that our website, our main communication tool, and how we connect you to our resources is not easy to navigate, to say the least. So I am happy to announce that on October 1st, just a few days from now, the Supreme Court of Ohio will launch our new website. Our number one goal was to create a tool which you can easily navigate to find what you need. Under the eye of Director Lynn Tolan, our PIO staff and our vendor brought the website into the 21st century. So please, as of October 1st, it is designed based on data. As soon as you log on, you will see opinions and announcements. Our data shows that that's what people look for the most on our website. So it's right there. And we want that to be your resource. We want to make your job easier. Judges simply click on the button that says judicial officers. That takes you right to the Judicial College, EGOR, judicial liability insurance, everything you need without sorting through everything else. It is tailored to the judiciary. But research shows that many people go right to the search on any website. Thank you, Google. You have trained us well. So we have a big, beautiful new search bar at the top, front and center. October 1st, visit supremecourt.ohio.gov. Now, it used to be sc.ohio.gov. Forget that. It's supremecourt.ohio.gov. The Ohio judicial system has a solid foundation for continued technological advancement. Technology is a good investment in the administration of the judiciary. We must be careful spenders. We must understand the financial operations of the court, and an investment in technology pays for itself many times over. As I look around the room, I see many judges who are new to the bench in the last 6 years or so. So you won't remember the years, when there were no raises for judges. It was not fair for committed, hardworking people who carried the weight that the judges carry every day to go 6 years, yes, that was 6 years, without a raise in wage. My concern was that we would lose the best and the brightest. The lure of higher pay at private firms is always a possibility, but judges set that aside every day, choosing public service in the law. But dedication has its limits. We know that. Children have to be fed, clothed, and educated. Families need a roof over their heads. So thank you to the judges who stuck it out during those lean years. My first state of the judiciary, I promised that when the time was right, I would advocate for pay increases for judges. That was no small feat. Judicial salaries are set by statute, and the legislature didn't loosen the purse strings for the judiciary from 2008 to 2014. In addition to the economic downturn, Governor John Kasich, the late Speaker of the House William Batchelder, and then Senate President Keith Faber all had budget priorities, and they didn't include the courts. But when I approached them, they listened, and they did the right thing. In July 2015, judges received a series of 5% raises in each of the next 4 years. I will tell you, it took time, and it required compromise. I had committed to tightening our belt through the crisis, and the court took a 10% budget cut for the overall good. That was a good faith effort on my part, knowing that I was going to be coming to the legislature and to the governor for our raises. As I made my case with Governor Kasich, he was willing to listen and promised me to approve a pay raise in the budget. He wouldn't do it in the lame duck session, which is what I was asking for. The compromise was in the budget. So rather than January 1st, we were looking at July 1st. There was just one little detail. I had to get the General Assembly on board. So then I went to convince Speaker Batchelder. Now, if you recall, maybe you don't, Speaker Batchelder was a judge during his hiatus from the legislature. He had to fill his time, so he became first a common pleas judge and then an appellate judge in very short order. And then he went back to the legislature. But anyway, so I knew that current Speaker Batchelder knew what I was talking about and would be kind of an easy sell. And then there was Senate President Faber. So I talked with Senator Faber. He was reasonable, gracious, and he agreed. They finally agreed to put it in the budget. They had agreed, but cautioned me that I would need to get the governor on board. So that's how it works. We'll promise something, but then they tell you what they think is going to be the hard hurdle, and they won't have to maybe come through because somebody else will say no. So, but I already knew that I'd secured the governor's promise back at the end of 2014. I knew John Kasich was a man of his word. He came through, he signed the budget, and that included our raises. So if you ever see John Kasich, say thank you. It did not happen fast and it didn't happen easily, but respect for the other branches of government, understanding each other's needs and what they face, and being willing to work together was critical, and it did work. Again, in 2018, we worked with Governor Kasich, Speaker Ryan, and Senate President Larry Obhoff, together in conversation and compromise, along with the Ohio Judicial Conference, and the result was a series of 1.75% market adjustments to judicial salaries over a period of 9 years, 2020 to 2028. These raises for judges will continue long after I'm gone. Longevity of the deal was important because I knew I couldn't go back to the legislature each year and ask for money. It had to be a package, you know? Did it help to retain quality judges? As I look around the room, I think the answer is yes. So I'm very, very pleased that we were able to do that. And I hope going forward that it will allow the members of the judiciary to stay in the judiciary and attract some more of the best and the brightest from the ranks of the bar. So I'm going to talk about data, and I'm going to link it to some of the things that we've done to kind of explain the very importance of data. You know, that negotiation I just talked about, like most negotiations, involve good data. So we use data to advise us in many ways. Data allows analysis of a system that heretofore had limited analysis. Data can be a powerful tool in convincing the legislature when courts need funds in the future. Data can inform you whether your decisions are having the intended results so that you can adjust. Whatever your area of interest, think of the data that would be most useful to inform your work and be data-driven. It's important because our work is about people's lives, defendants, judges, and court personnel, prosecutors and defense attorneys, law enforcement, treatment professionals, corrections and probation officers, and the list goes on. Data will allow all these folks I just mentioned to do their job better, get better results, and determine if what they are doing is working. And let's not forget about the taxpayer who expects and deserves responsible use of their tax dollars. The establishment and widespread use of databases will advance the fair and the equitable administration of justice. We know that there is no substitute for the discretion that comes with human understanding of the unique circumstances of a legal situation and the individuals involved. And you need only to look at my record to know that I support the independence of the judiciary. But an experienced judge who also has data, information about trends, what works and what does not work, how do rulings fall compared to norms, analysis can be effective and a part of a more trusted system. I envision data collected from the time of arrest to the charges the prosecutor makes, to the pretrial proceedings, to the disposition, to the sentencing, to post-sentence, community control, and beyond. We don't have data in any of those things I just mentioned that can be put into research and tell us what we're doing, what the system's doing, what our partners in the system, how effective it is. Data at every stage is necessary to truly understand and inform our work. My time is limited. I am not going to see that vision come to fruition in my term. It's just not going to happen. However, some first steps are underway now. Sarah Andrews and the Ohio Criminal Sentencing Commission are standardizing the way we collect felony sentencing data. Judge Jeff Reed in Allen County was first on board with the pilot. There are now 97 judges in 42 courts and 48 counties that have volunteered to participate in various ways in this project. More are signing on every month. That's because as judges, you know that sentencing is one of the most complex parts of your job. Recognizing that it is an intricate process and ensuring clear, comprehensible sentences is of the utmost importance to the administration of justice and promoting confidence in our system. The beauty of a uniform entry minimizes any mistake that may occur in the sentencing entries that will need to be reversed on appeal. It will ease the burden of the court staff as well. A uniform entry template offers a solution for collecting criminal sentencing data in a way that is efficient. It reduces duplication and does not fiscally burden local government. The resulting information is data that can be analyzed to understand the impact of criminal laws in Ohio and provide insight into evidence-based approaches to reducing recidivism and reasonable criminal justice reforms. And so, we must keep moving forward. If you want to understand the work, to learn more, I encourage you to contact Sarah Andrews from the Criminal Sentencing Commission or connect with any one of your colleagues involved in the project, such as Judge Jeff Reed, Judge Andy Ballard from Lawrence County, Judge Christine Croce from Summit County, Judge Ashley Kilbane from Cuyahoga County, Judge John Wells, Morgan County, Judge Jonathan Starn, Hancock County, and Judge Aiza Page from Franklin County. For the public to be informed and for truth to win out over rumor and fiction, people must be able to understand that justice is administered fairly and understand how we measure that. Overall, there is evidence, historical, statistical evidence, that the United States criminal justice system is fairer and more efficient, or excuse me, effective than ever. Yet, I believe that we can do better. Improvement includes looking at things through different eyes. This year, I brought a new dimension to the court in the creation of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Dr. Adrienne Fletcher joins the court from the Case Western Reserve University. And one of the first projects is working with the judiciary, the bar, and community partners to ensure that we consider a diverse candidate pool for positions at the court to ensure that no qualified person is overlooked. Competency should drive hiring decisions, and there should be no barriers for qualified individuals seeking employment at the courts or anywhere else. Adrienne is working with the Judicial College to create opportunities to raise awareness of inherent bias and ensure local legal access is not denied or defined by the color of a person's skin, their background, disability, gender, age, religion, or any distinguishing characteristics. This is the next step for the courts to examine how we do things, and this is a resource available to you and your courts as well. The better we do, the more we can help the public to know and understand the judiciary. Fayette County Court of Common Pleas Judge Stephen Bethard has an interest in history. He set out to preserve and update the 169-year-old Fayette County Courthouse. It is a beautiful place. You should visit it. Actually, we had off-site court, and my colleagues and I were happy to join him at the courthouse earlier this year. Each year, the school children come to the courthouse in Washington Courthouse to hear about the real-life judiciary and some drama on their tour. They can see the bullet holes in the doors from the Ohio militia. There's actually bullet holes in the wooden doors. They were protecting a black man inside from an angry mob that had gathered outside. And the militia shot through the door in order to disperse the crowd. That courthouse and what happened inside becomes very real to those students that tour that courthouse. All their lives, they will feel connected to it because they know its story, and more importantly, they met the judge. Most people never meet a judge, you know, so that is special. That's important. Meet the people. Make sure that the lived experience of Ohio matches the idea we talk about in civics classes. Civic education about the judiciary is extremely important. Most Ohioans never go to court during their entire lives. You look at the news or your docket, it's very busy. Busy with a small percentage of Ohioans. Most people go through their lives without ever needing a lawyer also. So we must explain our relevance to the people of our state often, and is a responsibility for each of us. Each one of you. The responsibility was one that Judge Michael Dougherty of the Clinton County Municipal Court took very seriously. It was a shock last week to get news of his untimely passing. He was just 53 years old. Heralded for his work, not just on the bench, he was one of those exemplary judge citizens who takes off his robe and gives to his community. He was active in church teaching Sunday school, in Leadership Clinton, as a musician with a band, boosters with the Boy Scouts, Special Olympics, and as the community Santa Claus. And he did that year after year after year. He did so much in his short time to bring honor to the bench. So learn from his example. As Judge Doherty exemplified, you too can make a difference. The Supreme Court Civic Education Program is a leader. Our other states envy and then learn from us. We take oral arguments to communities through off-site court. Many of you have been involved with us when we've come to your county. We brought cameras into our courtroom. Since 2003, we have made oral arguments available. Not only are they available live, they are archived. We received the Sandra Day O'Connor Award for the Advancement of Civics Education. It's a national award. It honors our multifaceted approach to civics education, longevity, continued program expansion, as well as a shift to online education during the pandemic. It is an honor that we do not take lightly, but we can do more. We have a unique program called Under Advisement. This program has been in place for several years. I'm bringing it to your attention because I would like you to consider partnering with a teacher. Get a hold of our award-winning Under Advisement program and spend time in the classroom helping tomorrow's voters to learn about the judicial system. The program, with the help of professionally created lesson plans, allows teachers to teach kids about the legal system by using a real case from the Ohio Supreme Court. They use a real archived oral argument and dissect the results of that oral argument all the way through it to the opinion. It's fun, rewarding, and allows you to connect with your community. And those kids can tell everyone that they met a judge, you. And they will vote for judges because they know about our legal system. So consider 2-3 days at most of your time with a local middle or high school and look at our program of Under Advisement. Sarah Stifler, I don't know if Sarah Stifler is here, but she is our director and she will make anything possible if you are interested. Contact our court and Sarah Stifler. You know, about 70% of Ohioans have said loud and clear that they don't want to stop voting for the judiciary. Yet, when it comes to elections, there is inevitably a drop-off in voting for the judiciary. In 2012, 40% of the voters in Cuyahoga County did not vote for the judiciary. In 2012, we had elections for the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and the Common Pleas Court in Cuyahoga County. That county is not alone. People who go to the polls vote in most of the races and then stop when it comes to the judges of all courts, because they just don't know. 6 years ago, I started a cooperative amongst the Supreme Court, the Ohio State Bar Association, academia, media organizations, and the League of Women Voters. The mission was to provide access to unbiased information about candidates for judicial office, in their own words, in one place. JudicialVotesCount.org was born. Each judicial candidate shares their information. Each judicial candidate answers the same three questions. This year, JudicialVotesCount.org has moved to the Ohio State Bar Association. Thanks to OSBA CEO Mary Augsburger and the OSBA Board President Judge Dean Wilson and the entire board of the OSBA for supporting the project and making the investment in spreading the word and making it bigger than ever. And thank you to the legislature, in particular Speaker Cupp. Last year, I had a conversation with Speaker Cupp. This year, I don't have conversations with Speaker Cupp. But when I had a conversation with Speaker Cupp, to his credit, I asked for money for this program so we could advertise it, and I asked for money. There was a little glitch in the legislation, that the allocation. He fixed it right away, and so we had the funding that we needed to advertise JudicialVotesCount.org. So I am grateful. I'm grateful to him and the legislature for doing this, because I think this is a tool that it will only continue to grow. So if you are a judge who is on the ballot this year, please fill out JudicialVotesCount.org. Even if you are unopposed, and I say that because people in your county will, or your district for appellate judges, will go there and they'll look and they'll learn about you, and that is extremely important. The website will be used by media across the state. Bar Association will have a media campaign behind it. Voters will know where to go to find out who is running on their ballot in their county. Again, if you're a candidate, fill it out. Please encourage the people in your community to get educated and to vote for judicial officers. Tell them about judicialvotescount.org. Tell them every chance you get, because an informed electorate means good government. I believe in an independent judiciary. I always have. And whether you vote as a D or an R or an I, when you put on the robe and you take that bench, you are sworn to administer justice and follow the law. Ours is the longest continuously operating democracy in the world because we honor the concept of three co-equal but independent branches of government. Voters overwhelmingly voted to amend the Ohio Constitution to end partisan gerrymandering. What voters have learned this year is that Article 11 is not living up to its promise. It did not prevent gerrymandering, and it did not prevent the use in the upcoming election on November 8th of unconstitutional maps that were drawn both for the congressional and the General Assembly districts. The Supreme Court had declared 5 times that the maps put forth were unconstitutional. The bottom line is that Article 11 has no discernible or enforceable effect to curb gerrymandering in Ohio. And it specifically says that the Ohio Supreme Court cannot draw the maps when the Redistricting Commission fails their responsibility. The vast majority of Ohioans said no to political gerrymandering, yet we do not have a constitution that will end gerrymandering. What to do? As I said in my concurrence on our first opinion, declaring the first map unconstitutional, to achieve the goal of ending gerrymandering, Ohio voters will need to return to the ballot box and vote to amend the Constitution once again. Article 11 must be amended to create a redistricting commission that is truly, truly independent. Other states have done this for the independent redistricting commission. Ohio voters can select another model, one that distances a redistricting commission from partisan politics by not having elected officials on the redistricting commission. Let's try having ordinary, sensible people who are not driven by politics, but rather by what's fair representation and justice. Securing a constitutional amendment is one of the most difficult things to do in government. The legislature can, of course, vote to place the amendment on the ballot. What do you think the chances are? But absent that, securing hundreds of thousands of valid signatures will be necessary. It will take many interested groups coming together to secure the signatures for a constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot. This is one thing that I hope to be involved with after December 31st. Fiorello LaGuardia, yes, the airport was named after him, a lawyer and a Republican, was elected mayor of New York City in 1933. He served through the Depression and World War II. In his 3 terms as mayor, he gained a national reputation as an honest, nonpartisan reformer dedicated to civic improvement. He unified the city's transit system, expanded construction of public housing, playgrounds, parks, and airports, reorganized the police department, and so much more. LaGuardia was often cross-endorsed by all parties in the city because, above all, he did what was good for his city. I love this quote. "There is no Democratic or Republican way of cleaning streets." What that says to me is that when you're charged as a public servant to do your job and leave politics out of it, whether you're sweeping the streets or any other job, you work for the people and the good of all the people, not political parties. Each of us is called to do that. I promise there is so much more we can do for the people of Ohio, so stay tuned. Now, I'm going to talk about some of the challenges that we've had. Arguably, the greatest public health crisis of our time is the opioid epidemic. Like the COVID pandemic, it will be with us for a while, possibly always. But COVID has been abated by vaccines. Researchers were already working on the science of the vaccines before we faced it. Medical professionals moved in quickly to identify and standardize treatments. Science is learning about the disease and how it morphs. Medical, business, and political professionals moved quickly to identify, analyze, learn, act, and adapt based on science. Opioid abuse, substance use disorder overall, has not been approached with the same vigor. Too often we see an emotional reaction of denial and blame. Would our communities be in a different place if science and medicine had taken the COVID approach to addiction from the beginning? It is our judicial role to mete out justice in an individual case, but I believe we have a responsibility to go beyond what is required at the moment. We have a responsibility to step back, to identify what is happening that impacts the system, analyze available data, and find solutions. And this way, we are constantly moving to improve our justice system. And that's been happening in Ohio. We in Ohio are pioneers in specialized dockets. Today, there are more than 263 specialized dockets in Ohio courts. That's a huge number. When I mention that number to chief justices in other states, they are impressed. And I'm kind of proud to quote that number. It reflects on Ohio's judges, men and women who are willing to complicate their days by running specialty dockets. It isn't easy. It can be an emotional roller coaster for all involved, and it's just plain hard work. These dockets, as most of you know, are dedicated to specific types of offenses or offenders and use a combination of holding offenders accountable while also addressing the underlying causes of their criminal behavior and their addiction. The root cause for participation is a struggle with either drugs or alcohol or both and or mental health issues. I believe that treatment in lieu of prison for people who qualify is their right. It is not a right for every case, of course, but for people suffering substance use disorder, veterans with PTSD, and others with mental health issues, jail is merely warehousing. There's no treatment, there's no recovery, and there's a tremendous cost to our taxpayers. Treatment is a chance to rebuild their lives. The Commission on Specialized Dockets, the Court Services Specialized Dockets section, and many of you have applied a scientific approach. As these dockets continue to grow, judges who oversee them are more educated than ever before on the science, the medicine, and societal data. It's a big commitment for those who embrace it, and your work is exemplary. And after more than two decades, specialized dockets are now a proven success story. Yet for all of your hard work, for all we have committed, opioids continue to plague your communities. In 2017, cases hit their peak, and then they began to recede. And then the COVID pandemic devastated that. In 2021, the numbers surged and surpassed the peak in 2017. New synthetic drugs continue to emerge on the scene. Fentanyl takes the place of heroin, but it is much stronger and much more dangerous. And the synthetic drugs are scarier for other reasons. What is really mind-boggling is that to those who manufacture synthetic drugs, they no longer have to put up with the vagaries of Mother Nature or the DEA spraying chemicals to kill the plants that produce the raw ingredients. Now, in Mexico, there are drug production facilities that use these synthetic ingredients, courtesy of China, and for pennies produce a product that makes them millions across the border, and in doing so, ruins the lives of millions in that process. So the fight goes on. Please do not be discouraged. There isn't one solution, but maybe a combination. In 2016, I convened RJOI, a collaborative effort called for the Regional Joint Opioid Initiative. It brought together eight states to share information, and that is the foundation of how we deal with the opioid or any crisis, really. We had to look beyond our state lines because we know that the opioid epidemic moves beyond state lines. People from Ohio go over state borders and do their activity there, come back to Ohio, it's fluid. We knew that the opioid epidemic was filling criminal and family courts. It was killing at an alarming rate. On the night before we convened our first Our Joy meeting in Cincinnati, the night before, the headline was the next day, or the day we began, 17 individuals died of overdose the night before in the city of Cincinnati. That blew everybody away in one night. Examining the problem from different angles together allows us to cover more ground. And we do this with Our Joy. We cover ground with the 8 states. We also cover ground with that model within the state, talking to one another, collaborating. And we do need to work collaboratively. Technology played a role in our work. Once data sharing was possible among the states, especially through programs like the prescription drug monitoring programs, that was put in place to combat doctor shopping and pharmacy shopping. That is a crime. It dropped precipitously when the prescription drug monitoring program was put in place, and it is an obligation before you're writing a prescription or filling a prescription that you check to make sure that that is legitimate and this individual is not, doctor or pharmacy shopping. Specialty doctors with the treatment providers are the best definition of community. People coming together selflessly to support one member of the community, and by doing so, strengthening the entire community. So please do not stop. Keep finding ways to save lives. Fairness is a central issue when we examine bail. Bail reform has been the subject of a task force report. Fairness in the bail system should be the overarching concern. The purpose of bail is to provide the accused a means of leaving detention while awaiting resolution of the case. However, the concept of bail has been convoluted. It's looked at as a means to keep someone detained until the case is disposed of. That's not the intent of bail. For those of you who preside over arraignments, when a defendant comes before you, there is usually the matter of bond to be considered. The first thing that you must ask, is this person eligible to be bonded out? And what gives you the information you need to make the call? The prosecutor, pretrial services, law enforcement, the victim, etc. If the individual is charged with a certain category of violent felonies, and that's statutorily listed, the felony charges, and is determined to be a flight risk, or if the individual is a threat to the community, a threat to witnesses, a threat to victims or their families, or other solid reasons, the prosecutor and law enforcement present at the bond hearing information that the court can then determine that that individual does not get a bond, and that person is detained until the resolution of their case. This is where a judge evaluates community safety. The very first decisions that are made by a judge in that situation is where they take into consideration community safety. If the defendant is too dangerous, proven at a bond hearing, then keep that person incarcerated until the case is disposed of. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what the DuBose case says. There's been a lot of discussion about the DuBose case, and I would like to set the record straight. DuBose did not take options for judges. It says we must consider each case on the facts. Ohio deserves judicial leadership that follows the law and the Constitution. It deserves judicial leadership that is free from political pressure and works to get things right. A constitutional amendment on the ballot this fall would require judges to consider public safety when setting bail. If a judge is setting bail, he or she had better already have considered public safety, because that was the first thing that they had to consider. The bond at that point is only to ensure that the defendant returns to court. The tools to guide your determination are the 8th Amendment to the United States Constitution, Section 9 of the Ohio Constitution, the Rules of Criminal Procedure 46 and 46B, and the Revised Code 2937.22. There are options to release people pending trial. Restrictions can limit risk while following the commitment that all are innocent until proven guilty. To manufacture fear and continue a pattern of jailing the people who can least afford release doesn't protect society. It only assures that money determines the level of freedom and the civil rights that one enjoys. In the last decade, the Judicial College has developed top-quality judicial education programs and encouraged judges to adopt best practices that meet national quality standards. In 2021, the Judicial College delivered a record 334 courses. That's more courses to more participants than any year in its 46-year history. And there were more options than ever before, in person, online, and by live webinar. Now, a special thanks to retired Cleveland Municipal Judge Ron Adrian, lifelong leader and teacher on access to fairness. He is the lead faculty and helped develop judicial fairness and procedural justice education for new judges. Retired appellate judge Jeff Froelich and Judge Stephen McIntosh have done good work in this area as well. Judge McIntosh is currently the chair of the Judicial College Board of Trustees. Thank you, Judge McIntosh. The Judicial College is a tremendous resource. I was saddened at the loss of Judge Lee Sinclair of Stark County Common Pleas Court in May of this year. Probably most every Common Pleas judge in Ohio was educated by him. Lee was the primary author of the capital cases curriculum for the Ohio Judicial College and the National Judicial College. He was such a leader. In addition to Judge Sinclair, we have lost a number of good friends since the last state of the judiciary. I'd like to take a few seconds and mention their names. Nancy R. McDonald, judge from Cuyahoga County Common Pleas. Judge Joe D. Russo, also of Cuyahoga County Common Pleas. Judge Larry A. Jones, 8th District Court of Appeals, and formerly the Cleveland Municipal Court. Judge Mark Beetham, Harrison County Court. Dominic Frank, East Liverpool Municipal Court. Judge Robert Reddick III, Miamisburg Municipal Court. Judge Mary Kovac, Medina County Domestic Relations Court. Judge Frank Gorman, retired from the Toledo Municipal Court. Judge Richard Marcus, retired from Cuyahoga County Common Pleas and also sat on the 8th District. Judge John Bogans, retired from 5th District Court of Appeals, previously judge in Stark County Common Pleas. Ross Avalon, retired from Lake County Domestic Relations. Gustalo Nunez, or maybe Gustalo, I'm not sure, Nunez, retired from Lorain Municipal Court. And Joseph Nara, retired from 8th District Court of Appeals. I have a little story about Judge Nara. He lived close to me when I lived in Cleveland Heights, and he would ride his bicycle over to the Shaker Club, but he'd ride right past my house daily. And then he found out I lived there. And I became a stop on his route practically every day. Now, of course, I wasn't home every day because, you know, I travel a lot. But when I was, I could always count on a conversation with Judge Nara. He would get off his bicycle and we'd chat. The Supreme Court should not be an ivory tower that just hears cases and lets the rest of the justice system fend for itself. Through technology, education and training, guidance and funding, and other supports, I have encouraged the administrative staff of the Supreme Court to help you to do your job with the best support that we can offer. And I encourage you to work together to make each other's jobs easier by communicating and by sharing information, just as you're doing in this meeting. Lean on the Supreme Court and the Judicial College resources to continuously strengthen your knowledge of the job and the courts. Use the toolkits, the guides, the bench cards. Don't hesitate to share feedback or new ideas. After all, you are on the job every day. What you experience is probably what is happening in other courts as well. You should not have to fend for yourself. This is a wonderful community, and it has been so rewarding to be part of it. Being Chief Justice has allowed me the opportunity not only to make a difference in Ohio, but to play a part on the national level. I have been active with the National Center for State Courts and the Conference of Chief Justices. I was president of the Conference of Chief Justices, was quite an honor, and chair of the board of directors of the National Center. I co-chaired the National Task Force on Fines, Fees, and Bail. Through these organizations, I have made wonderful friendships and worked with people that I greatly admire. I've traveled to faraway countries to teach about the rule of law to judges, to prosecutors, and to government officials. I swam with whale sharks in the Philippines, and dove with great white sharks off the coast of South Africa. It has been an adventure, and I have been blessed, to say the least. As I leave the bench this year, I leave with a grateful heart. I won the birth lottery into a solid family in the best country of the world. I had a good education, have good health, and I have the joy of good friends and good family, and 6 grandchildren. My career, thank you. My career has been enriching, and I am the first Chief Justice who has aged out. Now, what does that mean? I'm the first Chief Justice since the creation of the elected Chief Justice position in 1912 to actually age out. All of the others have unfortunately died in office or their career ended because they lost their election. Now, I'm not going to lose an election again. We know that for sure. And if I can stick out 105 more days, I think I've got a new record for the state of Ohio. As I said, I have a lot to be thanked for. Every office to which Ohioans have entrusted me, I know I have left in better shape than when I got there. My mother and grandmother would say, well, of course you did. That was your responsibility. Nevertheless, I feel they would be proud. So I am proud of the work that we have done together to prepare the judiciary for its next leader. Invariably, I'm asked these days, what's next? Well, I don't know. I don't know. What I do know, though, is that I will embrace the Italian concept, il dolce far niente. It's the sweetness of doing nothing, at least for a few months. So let's talk about what's next for you. I want you to do great things. I want you to continue to improve the judiciary, but focus on these 3 things. Don't let down your collective guard on opioids and synthetic drugs. It's a game of whack-a-mole. But we have to keep fighting for the health of our communities and for the future of our children and our families. Advance the initiatives. Continue to use and grow specialty dockets. But don't be afraid to innovate and change it up a bit if the science and the data tell you that there are better ways. Grow data collection and use it in decision making. It would be irresponsible not to. There is no business that succeeds in the state of Ohio or in this country that does not rely on data, and the courts should be no different. The legislature should be no different. The governor, the same thing. They should have data to advise them on policies and where the money goes and how to innovate. And we can do that for the judicial system. Data can be a neutral and helpful advisor. It can guide the legislature on how the taxpayer resources are to be used, especially for criminal justice, the courts, and corrections. And finally, get out in the public and talk about what you do. Humanize the judiciary. Let voters hear about all the good and the fair work of judges, not just the few times someone stumbles and appears in the newspaper. Ohioans want to vote for judicial officers, but they don't. And why don't they? Because they don't know. So make it your mission to change that, to do positive things, to get the press that will highlight the positive things you do so that people will get a different perspective on what judges do. In the words of Fiorello LaGuardia, again, as he announced his retirement to private life, you gave me a job to do, and I did it. And now it's up to the people. So God bless.